This is Commercial Oral Histories of Central Sydney, the Golf House. Talking to Mr. Lindsay Sharp. Can you please spell your full name for the tape?
Yes, it's LindSaySharp.
No E.
No E.
Ah. I caught out again. Today is the 29th, isn't it, of May 2001. And we're at the Royal Sydney Golf Club, and this is Richard Rexworthy interviewing. What year were you born, Mr. Sharp?
I was born in 1946.
And whereabouts were your parents living then?
In Cogra.
And did you grow up there?
Yeah, I did. I've actually spent most of my life at Roselands in Sydney.
And you go to school there?
I went to school at Beverly Hills Primary and Narwee Boys High.
And where from there?
Then I decided I was going to be a professional golfer, and I did my apprenticeship at Ashlar Golf Club at Blacktown and turned professional in 1965.
Right. So, and when did you start becoming a professional at a golf course?
Well, I actually ran the Canterbury Public Golf Course for Canterbury Council from 1967, and I stayed there, and I also played the tour in Europe and Australia until about 1978 when I went to Bexley Golf Club, and I was the pro there until 1985 when I took over the golf house.
Right, and what did you know? Can you tell me the story of the golf house as you know it from when you first heard about it right through?
Well, I always knew about it because it was always there from the time I can ever remember. And Jack Landis, who was the owner of the golf house in those days, I was the professional at Bexley Golf Club. I also had another two off-course stores, one at Blakehurst and one at San Susie. And Jack used to come around and buy or look for all of the odd second-hand clubs that he needed to fill in sets and whatever. And we just became friends. We chatted. And then Jack had to sell the golf house because he needed to refinance his golf course down in Canberra, the Capital Golf Club. And he sold it to his son Robbie and two other investors. And that really didn't work out because... And when the lease was up, Jack asked me, would I like to take it over, and which I did in December 1985.
And from then on?
Well, from then on, I ran it all the way through until I sold it in November 99. Yeah.
So what do you know about the building?
Well, I don't know a great deal about it. I knew that Jack and Harry owned it. Jointly, and then when Harry Landis died, it was left to his son David. So I bought Jack Landis's share in about 92, and so David and I owned it jointly until we were made an offer to sell it in about 96. So, and we thought it was about time we did, so that was how that all came about.
And who did you sell it to?
We sold it to a company called Trinvas Proprietary Limited, and I think their idea was to develop the entire block. But then they ran into problems with the refuge around the back, City Mission, I think it was, and they redeveloped that site so they could never, ever get hold of it, yeah.
So what about the business? You bought that. That was separate from the building, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, so I took the business over in 85, as I said, and then bought the building in about 92, I believe, yeah.
The whole of the building?
No, just Jack Landis's share of it. So David and I were tenants in common. Mm. Yeah.
And where was Rob Landis then?
Well, no, Rob had left the business altogether. He, I think he went to work for one of the golf companies, and then he was working for sale. You know, he's a great yachtsman. And then I think he at one stage was running the Mount Broughton Golf Club down at Moss Vale. I don't know where he is now. I don't know what Robbie's doing. Yeah.
Well, I know what he is. He's working for Sid Fisher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. One of the harbourside.
Well, that's right. He's a great yachtsman. Yeah.
Now, what about what did you know about Jack Landis in the first place? Where did he come from? Do you know?
Well, Jack, in those early days, they were two separate shops. There was Harry Landis's music shop, and Jack had a pawn shop. next door. And over the years, he found that every time he'd sort of pawn a set of golf clubs, they were the first things he could sell easily. So he just gradually got into the golf side of things and turned it into a second-hand golf shop, and then eventually turned it into a full retail golf shop. And then when Harry moved uptown, I think to Park Street, moved his music shop up, Jack knocked a hole in the wall and made it one big shop, and just developed it from there.
I note from the records that it was a kind of an arcade in the first instance. There was four numbers there, four shops originally when it was, and they were gradually bought. So now you say there was the music shop one side and the pawn shop the other.
That's right.
Which side was the pawn shop?
The music shop was on the corner of Blackburn Lane and Elizabeth Street, and the golf shop was the next one down going towards Central.
Next to Mar Elliott's, the other pawn shop.
That's right. Yeah, well, Mar Elliott's was further down. She was on the corner of Reservoir, and she's then moved up further up Elizabeth Street. She's up past Central.
What about the sign, your knowledge of that?
Well, I believe it was made by Consolidated Neon, who were bought out by Claude Neons, and it's somewhere in the early 60s. Jack actually designed it and had them build it and put on the roof where it still stands today. I had to alter the sign because when I took the business over in 85, the owners wouldn't sell me the name The Golf House. So consequently, I wasn't allowed to use the sign. So I was made to turn it off. I was originally going to call it The New Golf House, but their lawyers told me that it was too close. My lawyers said I would probably win if I wanted to take it to court. But then we decided that we'd just call it Sharpies. Not that I really wanted to do that, but as it turned out, it's just become one of those signs that have stayed there. So Claude Neon's had to take the out of the sign and put Sharpies there, and we could turn it back on again, and it's been on ever since.
Now, originally in... Do you know what year it was put up there?
I believe somewhere around 61.
Well, there's conflicting things, conflicting entries in the building permissions files. One is 61, and it refers to a vertical sign. And then again in 1966, it refers to a sky sign.
Well, yeah, I don't know. But, like, I turned professional in 65, and I seem to remember it was there then.
Maybe 61 in the first place.
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah.
Yeah, but it says in the records there's an application for a vertical sign, and then that's in 61.
Yeah, right.
And then it refers to it in it wasn't the same company either. It was another company. The first one in 1961 was Neon Signs Australasia Limited, vertical sign.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that was the case. Maybe there wasn't another sign there.
And then 1966, Consolidated Neon, stand support for sky sign.
Oh, well, that might have been it.
Well, I don't know. You might.
Yeah, no, I don't. No, I don't really.
I mean,
no.
That's not clear, is it?
No.
They could have well called the first one the vertical sign.
Yeah, there could have been one that was in the front of the building that went straight up and down. I can't really remember that. I put the awning sign there that's underneath the awning that's still there now. That was in about 86 or 87, that one went up.
And what about the building itself, the rest of it? I mean, originally it was supposed to have been four shops, and three of them had upstairs had two stories, and one of them didn't.
Yeah, that's right. They, in actual fact, back in the early days, they were tenant terrace houses leading into Blackburn Lane. That was the original building. And that's why I believe it's heritage listed down the Blackburn Lane side, because of the old window construction in the lane. And if you go into the building, you can see where the actual terrace houses went in, and out the back of the shop, the old courtyard is out the back with the old toilet and everything there. And Jack Landis put a roof over that and put an outdoor driving range on that floor. So in actual fact, there was no roof for part of the building.
Yes, I've got a record of that, actually. Roof deck. Oh, yes, as long as 19... 21, form new first floor to number 220.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, that's what they did, because you know, you can still see where the old laundry was, and matter of fact, that's all gone now because of the development behind. When the excavation part of that building fell down, so they've had to redo it. So they did never put the old laundry and toilet back again.
But these shops were actually numbers 216 to 222.
Yeah.
So how can that be that they had the entrances around the side of Blackburn Lane?
Yeah, I don't know how that actually happened, but I believe originally that they were like dwellings that went into Blackburn Lane. Mm. You know, that was the original use of them, and you can actually see where they were, with the old stairs that go up, you know, into the second floor, the old wooden steps with the railing.
So they must have been there prior to 1901, because 1901 it pairs them down as separate shops in Elizabeth Street.
Yeah, that's probably right, yeah.
Yes. And it looks to be very narrow for four shops, doesn't it? So that's why I thought it might have been an arcade style.
Yeah, no, not that I know of. It was well before my time then, but, you know, I only ever knew it. I didn't even know it with the music shop there. Mm. I only ever knew it when Jack had it as a golf shop.
Mm. I mean, it says 1977... deletion of arcade entrance and new display window, new entrance.
Yeah, no, I can't remember that.
1977,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
They applied for that and got it. Then before that, 1967, they wanted to pull the building down and build a new one. They wouldn't let them.
Right. Yeah, I can't see where they've put a new entrance, because it's still the old entrance. Mm. Unless what they did was change the entrance to... and put the shop window into where Harry Landis had the music shop. There may have been another entrance there, because both entrances to that building now are where Jack Landis's shop is. Mm. So I'd say that's probably what they've done. They've closed the entrance to where Harry's shop was and put the shop window in.
Yeah. The entrance wasn't in the middle. I mean,
No. The two entrances are definitely on Jack's side of the... Mm. of the building.
I wonder how they managed to get four shops then if they hadn't got it.
I don't think they could have. Mm. They would have been very small shops.
Yeah. Mm. They belonged to a Dr. Nash.
Mm. No.
And when the Landises bought it, it was the estate of Dr. Nash.
Oh, right.
Yeah, right. So I don't know. Yeah. But that the area to the north of that was all pulled down in 1901. That was known as the Wexford Scheme, when they formed Wentworth Avenue. And I was just trying to find out whether they were there before.
Well, I know. The only thing I know is that Jack told me that there was an original plan to run Hay Street, continue Hay Street straight through and join up with Campbell Street, in which case that the golf house building and that would have gone. And Jack had actually bought the diner, which was two doors up, to move the golf shop up there. But the plans never ever went through, and I think Jack sold the diner a few years later. But that was the original plan.
Right. Now, when you had the golf shop, did you spend all the time there, or just part of the time?
Yeah, no, I spent all my time there, yeah.
You had regular customers all the time?
Oh, unbelievable. It was, you know, in those days it was the only place to go, because we used to stock stuff, equipment that no one else did. We used to import it from overseas, and everybody got to know that if you wanted something different, that the golf house was the place to go.
So what were some of the best items, best sellers?
Oh, well, we used to sell, you know, the Callaways and the Pings and all of those, you know, right at the start, before they became the real fashionable golf clubs. And but the other thing was, we kept a huge stock of second-hand golf equipment, and it was a situation where, if you lost a golf club, you're looking for something that... you know, that was rare, or that you needed to fill in a set of golf clubs, we were the place to go, because we had thousands and thousands of second-hand golf clubs.
People used to come in there and sell them?
Yeah, well, I used to travel the country buying them. You know, I'd go up to Queensland and go to all of the golf shops and stuff and buy whatever they didn't want, and, you know, we had people that'd ring us and, you know, bring them in and whatever, yeah.
When you first got the shop, were golf trolleys in then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we sold a lot of that stuff, yeah.
What about buggies? Do you ever sell them?
Yeah, we sold a lot of buggies. We sold everything that you could imagine to do with golf. You know, it was we just carried the biggest inventory of anybody.
What made you sell it in the end?
Well, I'd been there a long while, and I wanted a bit of a change. And the people that have got it now made me an offer that I thought was fair enough. You know, I'd been in the business for since 1967, and I just wanted a bit of a break and have a rest, and that's what's happened.
Have they changed it much?
Yeah, they have a little bit. They don't carry, you know, quite the equipment that we carried in those days. So, you know, that was unfortunate, but that's the way it is. And, you know, it's probably not as popular anymore.
Yeah, I've been in there several times. There didn't seem to be many people in there, but I suppose it might vary according to what...
I believe it has slowed down a lot. You know, when we had it in the heyday, between 11 o'clock and 2:30, when people were having their lunch breaks, we'd have 20, 30 people in the shop all the time.
Mm.
And it was always like that. Saturday mornings, you know, we used to have five or six on the staff to cope with the amount of traffic we used to get through.
Mm.
I think parking has played a big part in it too. You know, there's not a great deal of parking around that area anymore, which is making it very difficult.
There was in the first place?
There was a lot more. Yeah, when we took over in 85, there was a lot more parking there than what there is today.
Mm. And did you have anybody, employees there?
Yeah, I employed generally about 8 to 9 people, and then we had casuals that had come in.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you must have had a pretty good turnover.
Yeah, we did. We had a full-time repairman that worked out the back that used to repair and refurbish the second-hand clubs, and he was busy all the time. They no longer have that. I believe they've moved the driving range from upstairs, which was the open-air one, back down into the shop itself, so that would have taken up a fair bit of space, but... Yeah, it was a very big business, you know, right up until, you know, probably 98, 97, 98, when things started to slow down a bit.
Mm. When you first bought the place, what sort of changes did you make then?
We didn't make too many changes, just basically cosmetically. Jack, you know, always was known as the person that had all of the equipment that you could buy. We just changed the shoe room around a little bit and put a putting area in. So, you know, we'd carry 400 or 500 putters at a time where, you know, people could just come and find every putter that was available. And they could stand around and have a putt in their lunch hour or whatever. Yeah.
Harry Landis, was he a golfer?
I never knew Harry.
What about Jack?
Was
he a golfer?
No, he wasn't really a golfer. You know, I think he played a few games. He owned the Capital Golf Club down in Canberra, and, you know, that was his main baby. He loved that down there, and I think it's still in the family today.
Hmm. So he must have got into it almost by accident then.
He did. It was purely by accident. You know, he just discovered that there was a market for second-hand golf equipment back in those days, and that's when he turned the pawn shop and just gradually, you know, developed it into a golf shop.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Coming back to the sign, it was Claude Nien when you first
yes,
went in,
was.
Wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And do you have any changes or anything like that?
No.
Apart from the Sharpies?
Only the Sharpies. That was the only thing that was changed from the sign. Yeah. Yeah. Kept it exactly as it was.
It didn't belong to you, did it?
No, it belonged to Claude Nien's. But it was amazing how many times it was used in rock videos. It was used in... Bonds made ads for it. There was quite a few other people used it. It was used in a commercial or in a thing about Sydney for the World Junior Soccer that went all over the world. It's an amazing sign. Everybody knew it. And I know that a lot of people used it in... I remember when... what was the name of it? There was a fish place up the road, and their ads always said just near the golf house. So, because everybody knew, every taxi driver in Sydney knew if you said, oh, you know, I want to go down to such and such near golf house, you know, and that was what they used to do.
Hmm. Did you get paid for the three other people you
did? No, we never ever charged anyone to use the sign. It was great publicity for us.
Yeah. So it was really a leasing arrangement between you and Claude Nien?
Yes, it was, yeah, yeah. We paid them a lease and a maintenance contract.
Yeah. So are you aware of what's happening now?
Well, yeah, I've sort of been kept fairly informed with it, and, you know, I couldn't understand. Firstly, I I thought it was great advertising for Claude's anyway to have the sign there. It's the flagship of all of their signs, their names underneath it, and even if it did cost some money to have it upgraded and repaired, I thought it would have been good advertising for them. And the furor it's caused, you know, the fact that that could have been pulled down with the radio and television and newspapers, you know, I think it would have been very bad publicity for Claude's to have pulled it down.
In some places, in Melbourne, for instance, the famous one down there, the Skipping Girl.
Exactly.
They've moved that.
Have they really? Yeah. Well, I know that there was an article in a Sydney Morning Herald about the two most famous signs in Australia, and that was the Cowgirl or the Skipping Girl and the golf sign.
Right, yes. Were you aware of whether Jack Landis himself designed it, or whether he copied it from somewhere else?
No, I believe Jack designed it. I believe Jack designed it.
It isn't around any signs in America?
No, there's nothing like it anywhere. I've never seen a sign anything like it anywhere.
Yeah.
It's a unique sign.
Because I've been around the world too. I've never seen anything like it.
No, I never actually spoke to Jack about the fact that he designed it, but I do believe he did. Yeah.
Well, I'll be speaking to his two sons.
Yeah.
Alan, I don't know whether I'll speak to David. I suppose I should as well. Although he didn't know a lot
David,
about it.
David wouldn't know. I doubt he'd know as much as Robbie.
Robbie. Alan knows a bit, of course, but he says Robbie. He put me on.
Robbie worked there for many years, so he'd know.
Now, what about people who maintained the sign? You aware that any was any contractors from Claude Neal? Because I'm trying to find somebody who has actually worked on the sign.
I don't know, but all I know is that if we ever got if there was a letter out, like the O was out in house or something like that, we'd get 10 or 15 phone calls the next day letting us know that was out. People had seen it from the train or, you know, do you know that this is wrong? Or do you know that that's wrong? So Claude's maintained it very well in that situation. We'd only have to ring them and they'd have workmen there, but it was generally different people because they'd have to come and see us to get access to the roof.
Mm. All right, well, is there any other question? Oh, is there anybody else you think I should interview?
No, I don't think there'd be anybody that would know any more than what David or Alan would know. You may speak to David, but I don't think David, you know, I didn't sort of see a great deal of David. He'd come in every now and again, and, you know, if we had to do some maintenance on the building when we owned it jointly, but that was the only time. You know, we had to put a new roof on it at one stage, but that was about it. Yeah.
Have you got any photographs or memorabilia?
I may have. I'll have a look for you. I know we took some photographs for advertising purposes. Mm.
Well, I'll pay to have them copied if you like.
I've actually got a clip that they did for Galaxy TV when Galaxy were going. They did a whole thing on the golf shop. So I can get a copy of that for you. It's a video played on television.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Was Dean Jones and Ian Stanley did it.
Right. Okay, well, Alan, there's one other... I've asked that question now. We've got a permission form here. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lindsay.
Pleasure.